It's sure good to be with you all this morning. I don't know about you, but this morning I've been kind of frazzled, running around like everything's crazy and going so fast. And I appreciate Brother Cliff and Brother Phil slowing things down a little bit this morning, helping me get my mind focused on what we need to be doing this morning. This morning we're going to be continuing on in our study of Ruth. The last 2 weeks we've taken a chapter each, and Lord willing, next Sunday we will finish the book of Ruth. But just trying to look at some things through that story that we can apply to ourselves. For those of you that weren't here, the first chapter, as we talked about it, we talked about love versus bitterness. And how Ruth had love for Naomi so much that she left everything that she had. Her home, her gods, her family, and all these things to be with her mother-in-law after her husband had died and her father-in-law had died. And how we need to show that same kind of love towards not only our physical family, but also towards our spiritual family. We also saw the bitterness that Naomi had and how she blamed God for the death of her husband and her sons. And how her bitterness was directed directly towards him. And how we need to make sure that we don't try to blame God or show bitterness towards God in our own lives when things happen. Then we looked at chapter 2 last week, and we talked about different aspects of kindness. We saw that kindness was shown by Ruth, and that we could learn several things about kindness. One, that her kindness was shown in her actions. You can see how much she loved Naomi because of her actions, and we need to show those same kinds of actions ourselves. We saw that kindness brings humility, as we saw that Ruth had to lower herself even below Boaz's servants in order to ask them to be able to go and glean from his fields. So again, kindness comes with humility. We also saw that Ruth's kindness was seen. It was noticed and it was appreciated. And again, there's lessons we can learn from that as well. Not only through Boaz, but we saw that the entire Bethlehem noticed her kindness. And it was kind of going around town what she was doing. And in turn, we saw that her kindness led to more kindness. Boaz showed kindness towards her because of the things that she had done and the reputation that she had developed of kindness towards Naomi. So we learned those different things. But this morning I want us to look at chapter 3. As we get into chapter 3, I guess the key word is redeemer. We're going to see that Boaz is going to take the place or begin the process of taking the place as a redeemer for not only Naomi but also for Ruth. And I want us to see that God is also putting in a plan, just as he did back then, for us to have a redeemer, for all those who are lost. God has made a plan and provisions for that. And so let's keep that in mind. As with the other lessons, before we get into chapter 3, I want us to look at a couple of things historically and look at a background of these people so we can better understand what exactly they were doing. If you look at Ruth chapter 2 and verse 20, we'll see one little thing that we read last week, but it's going to help us to see this idea of a relative and a redeemer. In Ruth chapter 2 and verse 20, we read there that Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he," that is Boaz, "of the Lord. He has not forsaken his kindness to the living and to the dead." And we talked about how that was talking in reference to Elimelech, her husband, and how he was basically showing kindness towards him, even though he is dead, through helping out Naomi and Ruth. But she continues and says, "This man is a relation of ours, one of our closest relatives." If you're reading from the King James, it may say the man is a near kin of us, one of our next kinsmen. And I want us to look at these two words here. These two words, even though relatives and relation look very similar, they're actually two very different words. When you look at the first word there, this word relation or near of kin, that is specifically talking about you are related by blood. The literal meaning is close in genealogy. But the last word there, the close relatives or our next kinsmen, this is the definition for it. It means to redeem according to the Oriental law of kinship, i.e. to be the next of kin, and as such to buy back a relative's property, marry his widow, etc. An avenger, deliverer, to purchase, ransom, or redeem. So what Naomi is saying to Ruth in here says, hey, this Boaz guy, he's not just our relative, he's also our redeemer. He has a position through our laws of him helping us out, and that makes everything else make more sense in these last two chapters. Some of their family members, well, all of them would be relatives, But not all of them would be able to fulfill this position of a redeemer for them. And so as we go through this, we're going to see that Boaz is in position to fulfill both of those things. And so we see that developing. Go and turn over to Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus chapter 25, we're going to see how this law is put into place and see what is written about it. Go ahead and put your finger there because we're going to turn to Deuteronomy 25 in a second and then turn right back to Leviticus 25. But here in Leviticus chapter 25, this role of redeemer is seen. Beginning in verse 25, it says, "If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back or redeem what his relative has sold." So again, here's God putting a law in place to make sure that those that are so poor that they have to sell either their land or even themselves, that there is something in there for them to be able to be bought back or redeemed. As we go through chapter 4, we're going to see that even though we're talking about Ruth, Naomi is actually the one who needs the redeemer first. She's the one that has the land, and she's going to have to sell that to be able to take care of things. But in turn, Ruth is also going to need that redeemer as well. One of the things that the redeemer is going to be able to do is to continue on the lineage, the family name, and also be able to take care of any inheritance that is there. And that happens through marriage. There in Deuteronomy chapter 25, notice what it says there. Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 5. It says, "When brothers live together, and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go in to her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out from Israel." Again, as we know, Naomi's husband's already passed away. Her sons are already passed away. There's no one to continue on that family name. And like I said, the inheritance that goes along with that. They would need a redeemer to fulfill that part in their life. Now, flip back over to Leviticus chapter 25 and look at verse 47. We will see here that there's a certain order into who is to fulfill this position of redeemer. Again, that makes sense as we look in chapter 4. There's a certain way that this is supposed to happen. Here in this specific example, it's talking about the one who had become so poor they had to sell himself into slavery. But we can see that there's a redeemer who can come in and free him from that. But let's look at who is in the line to do that. Beginning in verse 47 of Leviticus 25. Reread here. "Now if the means of a stranger or of a sojourner with you become sufficient, and a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to him as to sell himself to a stranger who is sojourning with you, or to the descendants of a stranger's family, then he shall have redemption right after he has been sold. One of his brothers may redeem him, or his uncle's son may redeem him, or one of his blood relatives from his family may redeem him, or if he prospers, he may redeem himself." So again, we see here that redemption begins with the closest family member. And that's why we have a hiccup with Boaz as we go through the story. Again, it begins with, in this case, his brother, then it goes to his uncle and cousins and so forth down the line. Again, we'll see that as we go on through here. All right, so as we begin chapter 3, we see that Naomi is trying to secure a future for Ruth under these provisions that God has made in his law. All right, begin reading with me in Ruth chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. And let's get into the text. Verse 1 says, "Now Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? And now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley in the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you should do.' And she said to her, 'All that you say, I will do.'" Again, she's just concerned with Ruth's future, her security and things like that. This is no different than what we see there in chapter 1 and verse 9. As we saw that she was trying to convince Orpah and Ruth to go back, Take care of yourself. Get your own family. Take care of yourselves. Let them, let your family give that security to you. Marry again. All these things. She obviously that didn't happen. So now she's trying to take care of it in a different way. And so in doing that, she's trying to get herself to, or get Ruth to present herself to Boaz in a respectful way, so that he will then pick up this. I don't know, rite of passage isn't the right word. This way of redemption, and pick up that role. Again, as we think about what Ruth is thinking at this time, it's very doubtful that she would understand exactly what's going on. She was not raised as one of these children of Israel. She wouldn't have known their customs and their laws, and that's why Ruth is trying to explain it to her. But in verse 2, we see that Naomi tells Ruth, Boaz is at the threshing floor. And I want us to look at that here for just a second. This threshing floor was a this big area with a rock floor, or a very hard floor, if nothing else. This is where they would take their barley and their grains, and they would separate the good seed from the chaff. These things would have been put, again, understanding where the Mediterranean Sea is over here on the west side, Bethlehem being over here. The threshing floor would have been over on the east side of town, because at night, whenever they were threshing the barley or whatever grain it was, the wind from the Mediterranean Sea would come across. It would blow through the town, and then you don't want the chaff blowing right back into it. He says here in verse 2 that he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Winnowing is just what they would describe as throwing the grain up in the air and letting the chaff blow out. Yet you want that blowing away from the town, and that therefore it was on the east side, so it would blow out. So that's what he's talking about there. But Naomi would have known that Boaz was there. Again, they would come in the evening and they would do that to catch the wind. She would have known that they would have worked late. And they would even have spent the night there, as we see here in chapter 3. They spent the night there so they could have a good start the next morning, but also to keep others from stealing their grain. And so Naomi's pretty confident he's going to be here, so she tells her what she needs to be doing. In verses 3 and 4, the instructions that she gives to Ruth, basically the first thing she says, go wash up. Put on some oil and make yourself look a little more rejuvenated, and put some good clothes on, some nice clothes on. Again, I don't know why exactly she's wanting her to put the clothes on. I don't know if it's get out of your work clothes, or if she was still in mourning garb after the death of her husband. And she's saying that mourning process is over, put you on some nice clothes and make yourself look a little more presentable. Could be either one of those, maybe it could be something else, but those are some possibilities with that. But regardless, she's going to look different than what Boaz has been seeing her on a day-to-day working basis. And so that's what she's doing. Ruth is following her instructions very well. But she also says there, make sure you don't go in there and distract him. Wait till he finishes eating before you go in there. Again, he was taking care of business himself, not just eating. And so don't distract him. You're here for a specific purpose yourself, and the timing needs to be right. So she's, again, giving her basically every kind of help and pointer that she can give her so that she can do what she needs to do. In verse 4, again, she's telling her about how to approach Boaz there. And I want to point out, you know, sometimes when you read this, it may seem like, what is she doing? She's going to him at night, and that may look a little sketchy and things like that. And I want to assure you, this is not anything that is done without propriety. This is all legit, I guess, for a better word. What she tells her to do by going and sitting at his feet, that is a sign of humility and respect and submission. That's exactly what servants would do. They would go in to their masters at night, lay down sideways, kind of making a T at their feet. And so she's laying there doing that. It's a sign of respect and nothing else besides that. Again, during this time and their culture, they slept with all their clothes on and everything like that. She's dressed in a certain way. There's nothing that's wrong there. This is just a sign of humility and basically saying, all right, Boaz, you take it from here. If you're willing, if you're in a position to be the redeemer for me, do that. And that's exactly what he would do. He would say, yes, I can do it. No, I can't do it. This is what we need to do in order to become married and whatnot. But that's basically what's happening there. Again, this may seem very sudden to us. Like, wait a minute, you just met him 2 chapters ago. Again, chapters don't tell us time. We know that she did get there at the very beginning of the barley harvest, and now they are threshing out the barley. So there's been an amount of time there. If as Boaz is talking about stay in my fields, he's got a lot of land. And so this isn't just a let's go harvest everything in one day. They most likely had some kind of working relationship and probably knew a little bit about what each other thought of one another. But anyway, that's what we see there. Verse 5, we see that she goes and does exactly what Naomi tells her to do. And that gets us to verse 6. Begin reading with me there in verse 6. Here we get the idea of a redeemer being brought up again. Ruth 3 and verse 6 says, "So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, 'Who are you?' And she said, 'I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative.' Then he said, 'May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first, by not going after young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence,'" or New King James says, a virtuous woman. Verse 12 says, "Now it is time I am a close relative, or now it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Again, he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." And so she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. And he said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know what the matter how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." Again, so we see that Ruth does exactly what Naomi has asked her to do. This is kind of interesting when you think about this. Can you imagine being in Boaz's shoes? You go to bed relatively by yourself. Again, there's other servants and hands there. But you go to bed by yourself, and then you wake up, and then there's a woman laying at the end of your bed. It kind of startled him. Again, he says, "Who are you?" So it caught him off guard there. But do you notice how he reacted whenever he realized who she was? It said that he blessed her. He was sounded pretty excited that she was there and comforted to know that that's what her desire was, to become his wife and to fulfill all these things. Again, he's been impressed with her ever since the beginning. But again, he points out this. He says, "You're a virtuous woman," or "a woman of excellence." Basically what he says here is, he says, you didn't engage in immorality. You didn't chase after a young man or riches and things like that. You stuck here and you stayed inside the family. You went to an older man and followed basically what our laws are. Even though they weren't yours, you still followed these things. That was a respectful thing for her to do. For him as well. And he says there, it's interesting how your kindness towards me here is better than the kindness you showed me from the very beginning. And again, that says a lot, as much as he was impressed with her through all of this so far. Again, he's overjoyed that he has this opportunity to be with her, that she offered this option to him. In verse 9, notice what it says there. She asked him to spread his covering, or spread his skirt, over her. And this is another example of Eastern symbolism. This is something that they would do to show their desire to protect and provide for their spouse. She's asking basically, I guess the New King James says, "Take your maidservant under your wing." That's basically saying, "Will you marry me? Will you accept me? And will you accept this role that has been offered to you?" You look at some of the Hindu and some of the Jewish wedding practices nowadays. They do that very thing. They'll get a silk or a cloth cloak, and they will literally wrap their wife in it, saying, "I'm going to protect you. I'm going to care for you. That's what I'm vowing to do." Again, it may seem weird to us, but really, when you think about it, isn't that what we're saying when we put a ring on? It seems a lot more realistic to wrap them in a cloak than to put a ring on your finger. But that's our custom versus their custom. They probably look kind of weird to each other in that respect. But I think one of the main reasons in the whole story of Ruth is this idea of redeemer. And comparing Boaz as a redeemer for a few people here on earth versus Christ being our redeemer and God making a plan for redemption for all people in eternity. That's really the big comparison, the type and the antitype of what we can see here from the book of Ruth. There's three things that I see that allow Boaz to be the redeemer, to make him qualified to be the redeemer. And as we look at Christ, we'll see these very same things. First off, he was qualified. He was qualified because he was a close relative. He also had the ability because he was wealthy and he could take care of her, but also he was willing. Lord willing, next Sunday we're going to see how unwillingness to be that redeemer will disqualify you from being a redeemer, much like unwillingness to be an elder disqualifies you from being an elder, things like that. But we're going to see that, Lord willing, next Sunday. But as we go back on the qualifications of Christ as the redeemer, we see these same things. Again, he was qualified as being part of God's family, but also being part of our family as coming down and taking on the form of a man here on earth. He was able in that he could pay the price when no one else could. He was the only one that could offer that sacrifice, but he was also willing to do that. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 2. We can read several different scriptures about Christ fulfilling all these things, his qualification, his ability, and his willingness. But here in Hebrews chapter 2, we see specifically the qualifications and the ability to do that. Hebrews 2, beginning of verse 14, we read there, "Since then the children share in flesh and blood, he himself also, or likewise, also partook of the same." Basically, he became flesh and blood. "That through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and might deliver those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives." Basically, he could become their redeemer. Verse 16 says, "For assuredly he does not give help to angels, but he gives help to the descendants of Abraham. Therefore, he had to be made like his brethren in all things, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted." So again, you see these aspects and how he was able to be that perfect sacrifice. He was able where others couldn't. In 1 Peter chapter 1, in verse 18, it says very similarly there, 1 Peter 1, verse 18, "Knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from the futile way of life inherited from your forefathers," verse 19, "but with precious blood, as of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ." Again, anybody could have died, but it wouldn't have done any good. But through Christ, he was the perfect sacrifice. He was the only able redeemer for us on a spiritual level. Again, unlike Boaz, who had to clear his way to become the redeemer, clear the obstacles and things like that, Christ was the sacrifice. He was the perfect redeemer in all of this. Now, as you turn over to John chapter 10, we see the willingness that Christ had to do this. He was not forced to do that. He makes it very clear that this was something he did of his own free will. John chapter 10 and verse 17, again, he is obeying his Father in this, but he still willingly did this. He said there in verse 17, "For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one has taken it away from me, but I lay it down of my own initiative. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I received from my Father." Again, Christ's sacrifice was exactly what we need in order to have a redeemer who was qualified and willing and able to do that. Again, so we see the antitype and the type with Boaz and Christ and God and all of this. So something that I guess probably the most important thing throughout this story. In verse 11, as we mentioned there, we see that Boaz tells her, "Yes, I am I'm willing, I'm able, and all of these things to do this. But whereas Jesus was the Redeemer, Boaz also points out to her, he says, yes, I am qualified, but there's somebody that's more qualified. There's someone who is a closer relative than even I am, and the right falls to them if they're willing to take it. And so again, you see this little bit of an obstacle. Again, that's why we look back at the history and seeing the qualifications of who is able to do it first. Boaz wanted to do it, but he says there is a possibility that somebody else could do that. And if they do, then so be it. They'll take care of you. But he falls short of saying, I want to be the one that does. I want to take that place myself. Verse 13, we see that Boaz tells Ruth, even though all this has happened, just go to bed. Get some rest here in the morning. We'll take care of things. I assure you that I will try to do everything I can in my power to get things right. But just be aware of the possibility that something else could happen in there. Then in verse 14, notice what he does there. He provides. He shows his willingness to provide for Ruth. And he says there, take out your cloak. And he put 6 measures of barley in her cloak. Again, their measurement system is a whole lot different than ours is. So I kind of took out the options to see what it is. So this is what I found here. 6 measures of barley. A measure is said to be about 2.5 gallons, which would mean she would have about 15 gallons of barley. Some translations use the ephah instead of measures. If that's the case, she's carrying about 200 pounds of cleaned barley. That's a whole lot. And some people say, nah, that's not real reasonable. I would have trouble getting 200 pounds myself. And I don't know about her stature, but I kind of doubt that. Some people say these 6 measures would probably be better translated seahs, however you want to pronounce that. If that's the case, it's about 60 to 80 pounds of barley. That's still a whole lot. If you remember in chapter 2, he gave her so much, and it was several days worth of barley that had been cleaned, and he gave her that. Well, this is more than twice that he is giving to her. Do you think he's telling her, yes, I will provide for you, abundantly provide for you, as we think about Thanksgiving and all the blessings that we have? He's saying, I will, and I'm willing to do it, and I would be happy to take care of you. And so that's what we see going on there. We also see that after this happens, that she gets up and leaves while it's still dark, before anyone can recognize anyone else. Again, why did she do this? I don't know if it's to protect their honor or make sure that no one thought anything was going on or whatever. I don't know, but we see that happening. In verse 16, we see Naomi's reaction there. And this is one of those things where the translation kind of muddies it up a little bit. The New King James, Naomi says to her, "Is that you, my daughter?" Now, based on everything we've read, I don't think that Naomi was wondering, is that Naomi, or is that Ruth? I wonder if that's Ruth coming in my door this early. She knows what's going on. The New American Standard says, "How did it go, my daughter?" I think that may be a little better translation. She knew what was going on there. How did it go? What did Boaz say? Is he willing to do it? Can he do it? What's going on? Tell me all the details, is basically what it says. And so Ruth goes and she does that. She tells him, this is what he said. There is another possibility of this. And then we end the chapter with Naomi saying, okay, this is what Boaz will do. You know, calm down, comfort yourself. He'll let you know what's going on. And so that's where we end up the chapter. And like I said, Lord willing, next week we'll tie up all the loose ends, put a bow on it, and help understand a little bit more about how this idea of the Redeemer works out. But as we leave, I want to leave with this last scripture, Ephesians chapter 1, verses 3 through 8. One more glimpse at the plan of redemption that has been afforded to us through God's plan. Ephesians 1 verse 3 says, "Our blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ, just as he chose us in him from before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. In love he predestined us to adoption as sons through Jesus Christ to himself, according to the kind intention of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, which he freely bestowed on us in the beloved. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished upon us." What a great blessing again, I like words like lavished. Words that show it's not just, He didn't just bless us. He poured it on us. Grace and forgiveness have been poured on us. Again, we have a responsibility in that to be obedient. But as we go through this, I hope that we can be reminded that God has always had a plan of redemption for His people, for His family, to take care of it. He provided the sacrifice for that, and a willing sacrifice at that, through Christ. We should, again, consider ourselves extremely blessed to be in that situation, to have this ability to access that Redeemer. Again, this morning, as you consider your own self, have you sought out your Redeemer just as Ruth had to seek out hers? Have you gone through the work of trying to find out and make sure that your future is secure, that you have a Redeemer and you have security in your life as well? If you recognize that you have not done that, I hope that you also recognize that you're just as lost as Ruth is without a Boaz. We need Christ for our security, for our happiness, for our strength and comfort. And again, we can only find that in Christ. If you're not a child of God this morning, if you've not been baptized and put on Christ in baptism, I hope that you will consider the state of your soul this morning. If you're a child of God and you see that there's weakness in your life, there's something that's missing out, I hope that you will turn to Christ and let Him be that for you this morning. If you have any need, why don't you come at this time while we stand and sing.
Someday you'll stand at the bar.